You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 301, Never Stop, Never Die. Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, number 301, the show that wouldn't quit, the show that didn't know when to die, out of Philadelphia, Mr. John Gentile.
Unstoppable, unpoppable, undroppable. Punk News Podcast 301, rumbling forward, stronger, faster, meaner, slower, older, goofier than ever, more chaos. Punk News Podcast 301.
And out of Los Angeles, Mr. Ricky Frankel, staff reviewer, staff writer, staff everythinger that I'm definitely not doing at this point. Ricky, hey.
Hey, just spent just recovering from punk rock bowling. That was quite the adventure, guys. Thanks for getting me in.
Ricky, I would love to hear a punk rock bowling story, if only that I can play old man punk rock bowling and judge it compared to the several experiences that I had at the festival back in like the early 2000s, because it's changed, man. It's not what it was.
Oh, I'm sure it has. Yeah, I got to tell you, like, it for not having Fest on the West Coast, this was pretty damn great. I saw about every band I wanted to see, except Youth Brigade, ironically. But no, I think in a 12-hour span, I saw Pairs, Subhumans, Flag, and Leftover Crack. And there's no other place I think that would have happened. And God, Nightbirds were so good. And Flag was mind-blowing. Seriously mind-blowing. Descendants killed it. The next, I think they did Day Two. And then Leftover Crack had their, they had Kate Koish there. I don't know if she's in the band or not officially, but, she was really good. They did a bunch of new songs. They actually had a really good set list, from all their material. Didn't get to sleep. The earliest I got to sleep was like 4:30, 4 a.m. It was just one big party for 3 or 4 days. The pool parties were gross. I'm not going to lie. They were just straight up gross, filled with pretty gross people.
Was it all dudes?
It was mostly dudes with a lot of tattoos and looked like they hadn't showered. And I'm like, that pool is probably just fucking stink soup. I'm not going in it.
That pool's like a shower.
Yeah, I know, it's gross. The only thing was, like, you could just kind of tell, like, there were, like, a lot of, I don't want to be, like, that stuck-up asshole, but, like, there were just a lot of, like, mall punks there that, like, clearly had just gotten mohawks just for the festival, just put patches on their vests just for the festival, which was fine.
Yeah, I'm not... Somewhere, Ricky, not everyone has been a dyed-in-the-wool true punk like you.
You know, I'm not saying that. Years. I'm just saying, like,
everybody's got to start somewhere, Ricky. Punk rock is about inclusivity, not exclusivity.
These were like parents, though. Like a lot of parents, like getting mohawks, bringing like your kid. No offense, Adam, but like these, like they, I don't know. Like it was just interesting to look at. I wasn't like saying fucking posers or anything like that. I wouldn't do that, but.
I'm pretty sure that's what you just said, Ricky.
No, I won't. I'm just like, you know what? That part I did not I guess I wasn't ready for. Other than that, no, it fucking, like, Punk Rock Bowling kicked ass. Like, it was so much fun. I mean, a lot of bands that don't come out here came out here that were, that really needed to after a long time. So, yeah, would go back again for sure.
The interesting thing for me to compare it to here is that when Punk News used to go to Punk Rock Bowling in Vegas, we used to go and bowl. And there was a time where we ran two teams as part of the bowling tournament. So for us, and at the time that we did it, the music festival was never – it wasn't even a music festival until the last year that we ran a team, I think. It was just like there were some club shows – after the bowling because all these punk bands were in town. So of course you'd have some club shows for it, but it wasn't like an event in the same way that this is like a festival. Right.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that's the major difference is that like now it's like a legit fest. And the majority of the people going there to go to the concert, not actually like be involved in the bowling at all. And for us, it was the complete opposite. So it was weird. So like all of my punk rock bowling stories are they're all weird and intimate in that they involved all these punk rock people that were just like hanging out at the time, and it was a way smaller thing, but yeah, like the shows were never like that. I mean, if you want, and I figure I can do this because I have distance between me, like this all happened 10 years ago, so no one's gonna get too mad about this, but I have like three or four really funny sort of incriminating stories. And one of them I really want to share here. And this is only for the Punk News podcast. This is not for the general internet. So only you, the few Punk News podcast listeners, the two of you that actually listen to the show are allowed to know this because it's funny.
So that's a 12-year-old and some guy in Sweden.
Yeah, yeah. So 12-year-old, some guy in Sweden, old guy in the UK. I think those are all the listeners, right? So so for you three. So there was a time when we used to go to Punk Rock Bowling and we used to go and meet the labels that we were actually writing about on Punk News. And every once in a while, one of the labels would be like, hey, you guys have written about us for a long time. Like, let's go have dinner. So we'd go have dinner with a label. And it was amazing. So the one year, and this was like the highlight of it, we went and had we had sushi with Fat Wreck.
And oh, nice.
We're first of all, So first of all, we're there having sushi. We're there waiting to get our table to have sushi with Fat Wreck. And the guys from Sum 41 were like sitting at the bar at the Hard Rock Cafe.
Nice.
And there was this like funny moment where like Fat Mike was like, I don't know if we should go talk to those guys. I think that's the Sum 41 guys, right? But no, but that night, so we finish our dinner, which was amazing and super generous and like probably the greatest experience of my life. But anyways, I'm name dropping. We come out of there. We get in a limo. So in this limo,
what
is me and Aubin and a few other of the Punk News people were there.
What old school Punk News people were there?
I think Scott Heisel, I think Brian Schultz, but I can't really remember. Right. We get in a limo. In the limo with us is Mike and Aaron. Also, because all these people worked for Fat back in the day, and this is why I don't feel bad about incriminating anyone. Mr. Toby Jag of Red Scare and Mrs. Vanessa, I can't remember Vanessa's last name right now, the greatest PR person who we talked to.
Yeah, she's cool, man.
Yeah, so yeah. Vanessa and Toby were both working for Fat back then. So Vanessa, Toby, Mike and Aaron, us, some other people, we're in this limo. We're going to the show. It's like a D4 show or something that night. And as we're pulling up to the show, Mike goes to the limo driver and he says, dude, you got to go pull into the alley and let us out over there. We can't fucking pull up in front of a punk rock show and all get out of a limo. They're going to eat us because there's all the crowd was lined up there. And he's like, we're going to look like total D-bags driving up in this limo. Like, go let us out in the alley and we'll wander around the corner like we came off the street. And I loved that. It was so great.
Whose limo was it?
I'm sure it was Mike's limo. Like, it wasn't Mike's personal limo, but I'm sure he hired the limo, right? But holy shit, yeah. There were so many things like about punk rock bowling that were always great. I remember that like for us it was, you know, we would be at whatever hotel that we were going to, and I'm sure that like the Stearns from BYO Records still run the thing.
Yeah, he was there.
And I definitely remember like at one point we had some like super dumb procedural question that we had to ask about like when someone was bowling or some detail that was boring. And we're standing around in the registration for the hotel and one of the Stern brothers were there. And like we had to just to go ask them this stupid procedural question. But there's the thing about the Sterns is that like they're Stern. Like, there's something about those guys that just, like, scream seriousness, and you don't want to walk up and ask them, like, you're dumb. Hi, I'm a punk rock blogger. I want to ask you a dumbass bowling question, right? Like, you could not do it without looking like a total moron, and we probably did. God, there was a lot. That I have such good memories about that because that was, like, such the early years of punk news. So, yeah, punk rock bowling, like, super, super close to my heart. There was something else. Oh, yeah. Once I saw Matt Skiba get carded in a casino because I thought he was too young. It was fun.
Actually, also I should mention just how, you mentioned D4. They played this year, too. God, that was my first time seeing them. That was amazing. That was really great. But, yeah, I never even saw I never even was in a bowling alley. I didn't see anything. And one of my favorite parts was when they, like, on stage, they announced the they announced the winners of the bowling contest, and
who was it?
Their team name was great. They were called Asshole. That was it. It was great.
See, because when we bowled, and the problem with it really is that, like, it became popular enough that it started to kind of outgrow its thing. And it used to be like they get a casino that had a bowling alley in it, and they could run the whole thing out of there. Maybe even some of the shows, but they really quickly outgrew that as the popularity started to grow. Yeah. And then they have to, like, get more bowling alleys and run more, more.
So you gone?
You guys still there?
I'm here.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Skype hiccup. Hey, we're recording this live. Whatever,
man.
They'd have to, like, keep, like, to run two heats of people. So, like, everyone wasn't always in the same room at the same time. God, I don't know where I was going with this. Oh, yeah. When we bowled, it was
back
always
in the day, we used to tie
back in the
to
day,
our
I'm
belt,
trying to make myself sound really important back in, like, 2005. So, like, 10 years ago, I was somebody in the punk rock universe. No. what we found was that, like, the majority of the teams were there to drink and just goof around. Mm-hmm. And there was a handful of teams that were really fucking serious about it. And usually the teams that seemed really serious about it tended to be, like, I think the fat guys were pretty serious about it, but, like, Epitaph was really fucking serious. Like, BYO, of course, was really serious about it. And we, at the one year, I remember, like, we ended up, like, the punk news team was, like, slotted, like, next to, like, we were, like, bowling right next to one of the Epitaph teams. And it was like walking on eggshells the whole time because we're like, we are there to get drunk and then eat French fries in a bowling alley and then, you know, like, try not to embarrass ourselves too much and try not to get punched out by one of the post Jello Dead Kennedy singers. That was all of our goal. And then we end up bowling next to, like, Epitaph or something, and, like, they're there to fucking bowl, and they could, like, they're really good about it. And I assume it's because, like, for us, punk rock bowling was the first time that a lot of the punk news guys even met each other. Like, in person.
Oh, that's interesting.
For the most part, most of us met each other for the first time. Even those of us that are quasi-local would have been at, like, punk rock bowling. So, like, anyone who was around in punk news back in the day, Brian Schultz, Chris Moran, Scott Heisel, Dante, like, anyone who, you know, who met each other there for the first time. So we were not a cohesive bowling unit. Like, most of us have maybe bowled once or twice in the previous calendar year, let alone ever as a team. And we're bowling next to these labels from LA where, like, they all live around each other. They work together. So if they're going to go train to be on a fucking bowling team, they could. And you had to be careful not to step on them. I feel like the name dropping part of this show is over. But
Back
in my day, we used to tie an onion to our belt and go up down as was the fashion.
Well, now, like, it's... You know, you have to walk. I think you have to walk like 3 or 4 blocks just to get to the festival part with the giant stage on this huge. It's basically on a giant parking lot, and then club shows are up and down Fremont Street.
Hold on. The name dropping hasn't stopped because I have the silk screened poster for the 7th annual punk rock bowling tournament behind me in this room here.
That took place in
1830. I wonder what the year was on this. Hold on. 2005. There you go.
Yeah, so it was great. I would totally go back, especially since, like, I don't know if the chances of me going out to Fest, I think, are slim, but still, this is to me, just as good. I mean, unless I don't know something about Fest comparatively. But no, seriously, it was great. And I want to go again.
The funny thing for me at Fest was that, like, at Punk Rock Bowling, we were very conscious about not pissing off the Stearns. A, because I love Youth Brigade. And B, because, like, it was their show, right? You don't want to piss them off. It's their house, mm-hmm. right? You don't want to mess it up.
Yeah.
Fest, I'm there. It's Sunday in Florida at this point where they stop serving alcohol because Florida's stupid. And we're wandering around the streets. And who comes up behind us on the streets and is like, man, do you guys know where we can get any beer or liquor or whatever? You turn around, it's fucking Youth Brigade. So, yeah, that's all. That's all the name dropping. Seriously.
Yeah. I got. I don't know. So, like, the Dwarves brought on a bunch of different people during their performance. They brought Scott. There's video of this on the Punk News Instagram where you can see a bunch of pictures, too. They brought Scott Sturgeon on stage to sing I Will Deny, and there's video of that. They brought Stacey D up from Bad Cop, Bad Cop, and other people. So that was cool. Yeah.
Fun fact, Black Dahlia recorded an EP with Stacey D long before she was in Bad Cop, Bad Cop. FYI.
Oh, yeah. She's credited in, like, Born Again also. Like, she's
credited before that, Ricky.
Okay, well, there
fellow.
You go. Well, I'm
let me tell you about the time that me and Black Dahlia drove Route 66. So, no, I don't have to say.
Yeah, I'm nowhere near the Dwarves fan, so I can't vouch for myself like that. But no.
All right, we should get this party started because we have much shit to talk about this week. Does anyone want to play a song before we get going here?
I guess I can go. Hang on a second. Let me find the thing. So we recently posted that 16 bands to check out in 2016. I wrote about Gloss because I thought, you know what, maybe they're either going to be touring, or maybe they'll hopefully put something out this year. So just that's a band to definitely keep an eye on. I couldn't find much of anything on about them on social media. Like, they don't have any kind of Facebook or anything like that. So I think, giving this band as much attention as we can when it's appropriate, I think is a probably good thing because they rock. So I'm gonna play a song off their demo. So this song's called Outcast Stomp by Gloss.
Okay, we're back. That was Gloss. We have lots to talk about this week. All sorts of crazy stuff happened. John, let's talk about something that's related to our buddy Andrew WK and also related to our not buddy racism.
So listen, Andrew WK has got caught up in a little bit of a mix-up this past week. Although, honestly, it's really not his mix-up. What happened is there's a club up in New York called Santos Party House. And Andrew WK, along with some other musicians, is a partner of the club. Although it's not clear exactly how much of a share or how much of a stake Andrew WK has in the club, the answer is probably not much. He's probably a silent partner. But who knows? We don't know. Anyways, on Friday night last week, there was New York City Oi Fest and the Black Bear Bar in Brooklyn. And what happens was there was allegations that some Nazi skinheads either showed up or that some of the bands were Nazi skinheads or that it was promoted by the Nazi skinheads. Somehow there was allegations that Nazi skinheads were somehow involved in the event. And during the one of the shows, during a band called Offensive Weapon played a set at the Black Bear show. And they covered a Brutal Attack song. Brutal Attack is a self-professed white power band. So the Black Bear bar said, well, we're not going to have it on the second night. So on the second night, the New York City Oi Fest was moved to Santos Party House in New York City. Of course, Santos Party House had all kinds of acts. Andrew WK. Well, I don't want to name anybody else. It's a normal club. It's not like a weird club. Normal bands play there all the time. So then they had the event there. Then the very next day, there was an announcement that the club was closing down permanently for good. And some people said that the reason it was closing down was because of the Nazi skinhead element at New York City Oi Fest, and it was somehow related to that. Meanwhile, the club manager said that the reason the venue was closing down was because their lease was up. And that was the end of the 10-year lease of the club. The weird part is there were dates scheduled following New York City Oi Fest. So it would have meant they would have scheduled things for after their lease was up. The manager's name was Sean Kane. So, no, it's really unclear exactly what happened here. Some people think that the thing was shut down by the powers that be, whoever those powers may be, because that the venue had Nazi guys at the show. Although it wasn't even proven that there were Nazi guys at the show. But I guess it wasn't disproven either. No one really seems to know. The other side said that the club was shut down simply because the lease was up. So it's really unclear. I've got a position on this. Well, I'll just say my position. My position is this. Is clearly, I mean, let's assume that the club was shut down because there was a Nazi bands there and that the booker made a mistake or whatever. Right now, punk rock and music in general, but especially punk rock, has this no mistakes policy. And if you ever make a mistake, we will destroy you. Ricky and Adam, do either of you really think that Sean Kane, the manager and booker of Santos Party House, co-owned by Andrew WK, do any of you think he's a Nazi, like, at all?
I can't call him one. I mean, might have...
Listen, I would bet a lot of money that he's not. I don't know that he's not, but I would bet a lot of money that he's not. So,
just geographically, a New York...
Well, there were Nazi skinheads in New York in the 80s, but I still feel as the Nazi skin element is overstated. But so if anything, he made a mistake and didn't realize. I mean, Oi guys or skinhead and Oi guys are like, not all skinheads are racist. Most skinheads are racist.
That's what's so confusing.
But then the racist skinheads always seem to show up at all the events. So let's say the guy did book it and he didn't realize there was Nazis involved. So he made a mistake, you know. So he made a mistake, you know. They said we didn't mean to have Nazis here, so there's no reason to destroy the guy. If people make a mistake and say they make a mistake, there's no reason to just destroy them and throw them into the ground like punk rock people seem to want. So if that's the case, I think it's a shame, and I think punks need to learn the skill of forgiveness and understanding, and that if you were in that person's shoes, maybe you would have made that mistake too.
I wonder if the club is really closing because of this. I wonder if they said, you know what, this is really bad. Let's close it, and then they'll rename it as something else to hopefully get the reputation cleansed a little bit, I guess. But I mean, doesn't it take? I mean, I don't know what it's like to own like a club like this, but I figure you can't. It probably takes a little while to just close something like this right away.
Clubs like restaurants can be operating at full capacity, not full capacity, but operating at 100% one day. The next day, they're completely gone.
Oh,
that's
okay.
That's very common for clubs.
I didn't know that.
Medium-sized clubs seem to have a really hard time making any money at all. I don't know why. I mean, I'm sure there's a valid reason. I just don't know why these clubs have such a hard time making any money whatsoever.
Well, what I don't understand here is that the implication here is that whether it was intentionally whether they intentionally allowed, say, a Nazi skinhead element to be there or didn't, the implication is that they closed the club out of, I don't know, fear of public outcry or out of embarrassment or out of something like that. But let's say it was an honest mistake and they didn't realize that allowing this Oi Fest in had, you know, some various Nazi things that were going to be implied about it. It's really easy for me. Like, I'm thinking about it. Like, it seems really easy to get ahead of that without having to close your club, where you could go out and say it. You could admit, whoa, holy shit, we didn't realize this. We totally disavow any of the Nazism or whatever was professed here. You know, sorry about that. We'll donate the next few months of proceeds to, like, anti-racist action. Like, you can take all sorts of steps to both keep your business open and disavow that bad thing that happened. And that seems all less extreme and way more doable than just like, oh, we're going to close. So I'm almost more willing to believe that, like, it's a coincidence that, like, they were actually going to close. And maybe because they were actually going to close, they, you know, they knew they were going to be open that night. They had nothing booked. This event needed to get moved from another venue. And they're just like, fuck it, whatever, run it. It's the last night. We don't give a shit, right? And it turns out it was an unsavory event. Like, to me, that seems more realistic than, like, oop, we're embarrassed, we're going to close the club now. Or, like, what's the opposite to that? Like, oop, they've discovered that we're all agents of Hydra. We now have to close the club and move further underground. Like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. So I'm willing to believe that, you know, that they didn't close because of this. But,
well, I mean, there's no statement. I'm looking at the club's Twitter account. It doesn't.
The manager left a statement. He said, "It was a 10-year lease. Our lease is up, and we're not renewing it." That's the manager.
Maybe it was just just coincidental timing.
It could also been the straw that broke the camel's back. Like, maybe the club's been losing money, so the owners were like, screw it. A deeper question, and I saw the commenters getting involved in this, is, let's say New York Oi Fest really was anti-racism, but Nazis show up because they like skinhead music and they want to hang out. The question is, let's say Nazis start coming to punk shows, should you close down the venue? A lot of people seem to think yes.
Well,
I'm strongly on the opinion, no, you should not close down a venue. Why should you let hate mongers control where and when you can express yourself and what fun you can have?
I think they inevitably start fights. Those guys always start fighting. I remember the Street Dogs show I think it was 6 months ago, 7 months ago. I think it was in Boston at the House of Blues. And remember, like, one of the band members went in there and beat the shit out of some guys that were giving some Nazis that were giving some other people problems in the pit. And they just always get violent. And, yeah. Well, listen, I mean, I've been to shows where one, I don't know if the skinheads are, like, cool skinheads or Nazi skinheads, so I just stay away from them regardless because I don't want to die. And then, I don't think you should, if they're not bothering anyone, I don't think you should just kick them out because they have, you know, they're dicks or just ignorant assholes. But if they start hurting people, which they almost always do, get rid of them.
Yeah, I mean, you can't tolerate that. You can't tolerate violence at all.
But if they start, like, spouting off, you know, if they start doing Zieg Heils in the circle pit, then yeah, get them out.
But I mean, like, you can't let them close down your club. Like, so many commenters and so many people said, well, that you should close down the club if racist people start showing up. You can't do that. You can't.
It's bad. It's also bad. It's just straight up bad business to do that.
Yeah. Adam, what, you want to say something?
Yeah, just like, I remember when I was in university, there used to be a small handful of skins that would come out to most of the punk shows that were there. And those guys were all incredibly cool to everyone. And so,
cool Nazis, Adam? No Nazis.
They weren't
cool
Nazis.
No, the non-Nazis.
Let me tell you about the history of skinhead. No. But so, like, you know, these guys were cool, normal, you know, people. They happened to be skins because they liked Oi music, and like they were fine. What I would imagine that, like, part of the problem one of these things are, if you're going to go in a gigantic metropolitan city where there's every stripe of life in there, and you're going to run an event that doesn't just have some name, it's not called, like, I don't know, like, Awesome Punk Blasto Fest or something, right? Like, it's called Oi Fest. You have to at least anticipate that type of thing is going to call out both the
normal, cool, non-racist skins, but also some of the racist ones. And just running an event like that in that kind of city that has that kind of population, you're going to get those people out there. And I back up a little bit from even the venue and go on to the promoter and go, like, is there some way to stage or brand this sucker in the first place that, like, you know, discludes the racist element from coming out or something? Like, well, I don't know what it would be.
Here's the thing. If you, let's say, like, you said, maybe you did like a no sign through a swastika, like on a flyer, that would inevitably get the even more to come.
Yeah, it would. That would like prompt a battle.
That would just totally, I've heard stories from people at shows where like Nazi skinheads will come up to them and tell them to take off their shirt because it has the Nazi punks fuck off Dead Kennedys logo on it.
Well, then it's time to start throwing punches, baby. There's more you than them.
Those guys are scary, man. They are. I mean, at least the Anaheim ones, whatever.
I think the real solution here is you got to go to the gym.
Yeah, Ricky, you need to.
You
got to
get really fucking jacked.
And you got to. Yeah. You know, I want to see. You two go at it with. Are there really with the Canadian Nazis, if there is such thing, and then. Philadelphia, I'm sure there's a group out there.
Everyone in Canada is as pure of intent as the freshly fallen. We have no Nazis. So what I think is, and also I'm old. But I'm gonna go. I'm like 67 years old. I'm gonna go fight fucking Nazis in the street.
Well, I'm 12. Should I be fighting adults?
Yes.
Hey.
Listen, I've sort of said this before, man. It's like there's such a stigma associated with skinheadism. It's like, is the hairstyle and dress style that important? If you have Nazis co-opting your dress and hairstyle, just change your dress and hairstyle. That's not what makes you what you are. You know what? Like if Nazis started wearing track jackets, I would stop wearing track jackets. I'd be like, listen, the battle for track jackets is not that important. You know what I mean?
It's definitely weird, but it's one of those things that, like, I don't want to judge too much because I don't want to, like... I'll judge the Nazis, but, like, people that just, like, for whatever reason come to the point where, like I'm going to be, like a legit skin that's not a Nazi. I imagine that there's an element of that music that you're finding your community in. And I don't want to shit on anyone for like finding their community in Outkast music.
Why doesn't the community just change the style? Say, listen, we're not going to be. The community says we're not. You know, all the skinhead elders come together in their Fred Perry robes, and they say, listen, we're not going to be skinheads anymore. We're going to be dreadlock guys, and they all grow dreadlocks, and they all wear track jackets. You know what I mean? Like, why can't that be the style that represents the same values? Why is the clothing and hairstyle that important? Like, is the battle worth it for that? For suspenders? And this is all over suspenders. Well, also, this whole thing's over suspenders.
Well, I think this
no one needs to wear suspenders. The belt is invented.
What one? Someone once told me, like, it all, like, to distinguish them. It other than like swastika tattoos or whatever, they apparently like. It depends on the laces in their boots and what color they are.
Well, Nazis wear red suspenders. Non-Nazis wear black suspenders.
So maybe it's the red laces or something like that. I think this means we need a skinhead correspondent here at Punk News. Because I do not know this stuff well at all.
Tom Trom is a skinhead, but not by choice.
All right, we are 45 minutes into this episode, and we talked about one story. I'm going to hop to the next one here. So, moving right off of skinhead music in the way that...
I got to play a song real quick, Adam.
Go.
By the Toy Dolls? Yes, we're going to play the classic by the Toy Dolls. Yul Brynner was a skinhead. This is off, I don't know, their first album or second album. It's a classic tune. Yul Brynner was a skinhead by the Toy Dolls. From a film reminds me you don't get to go here. We saw from a skinhead called the Alan Collins Tucker. He's not as wise as he seems, cause he's just an actor. He's a dunce, I've never seen him on the grip. Fucker! We always use seven grin.
a skinny. They say northern news, but I've never seen you been a wearing don't know what shoes. His only claim to fame was that he had a shiny nut, but I would look just the same if I had my hair cool.
They always use silver grin to define his name, but they know that beauty's not a normal human being, cause he uses
we're back. Moving off of the whole skinhead topic here, and back into territory that I think I'm a little bit more familiar with. So this past Friday, or a couple Fridays ago, depending on when you're listening to this episode, saw the release of the new LP from the singer-songwriter Daniel Romano. Now, Romano's been releasing pretty throwback, pretty authentically old-school country music for the past three or four records at this point. Lots of kind of like Lee Hazelwood style stuff. And his new record just came out and it's called Mosey. And if you've heard Mosey, it's pretty fucking neat. It's got lots of psychedelia and lots of like 70s stuff creeping into it. Lots of Bowie creeping into it. It sounds almost as if like the old 1950s country Daniel Romano like did a bunch of drugs and had a second career comeback. Anyways, though, Romano, at the same day that Mosey came out on New West Records, he also released a new punk album called Ancient Shapes. That's the name of the band. It's really all him playing all the instruments. The thing calls to mind like Television and Buzzcocks. It's pretty cool.
A little bit of the jam.
Yeah. So, you should go check it out. It's on You've Changed Records, which is the label that he co-runs here. Now, why am I talking about Daniel Romano, the country guy, on the show? Is because Daniel, A, used to be a member, the lead singer of Attack in Black, which was a pop punk band, pop punk might not be the right word for it, but a punk band from the early 2000s that everyone fucking loved. Everyone loves their record Marriage, and Attack in Black's history has been really super interesting, especially like Romano's career path. So if you were a fan of Attack in Black back in the time when they did the when they were a punk band, then Ancient Shapes is what you should go check out. Although interestingly enough, like Ancient Shapes is way more throwback to 70s punk than anything that Attack in Black did. Attack in Black was very much sort of rooted in that that post Weaker Than's, post Hot Water Music sound, you know, informed by a lot of No Idea and what was going on in kind of like Canadian punk rock in that time. So this is way before that as far as influence goes. So it's an interesting thing to go check out. So yeah, I don't know if there's too much discussion here, but like, hey, if you decided that you don't want to follow a bunch of country records, but you still have a lot of love in your heart for the old Attack on Black stuff, go check out Ancient Shapes. It's on You've Changed Records. It's neat. So yeah, that's where I'm going to leave that one.
All right. Shall we move on to the next one?
Oh,
not
yes.
Not thrilled about this. Okay. Last week, Riot Fest said,
about this. This is awesome. This is classic.
No. Anything involving this guy, no.
It's classic.
No. Last week, Riot Fest said Morrissey was co-headlining Riot Fest Chicago with the Reunited Misfits. Fuck, that is just a tough headlining to swallow. Then through this fan site, Morrissey obliquely said that he was not scheduled to play Riot Fest at the time. Well, now he says he is playing Riot Fest again. I have a theory about this, and I'll say it in a second. As per Mozman's message to his as per Mozman's message to his True To You fan site, Morrissey is confirmed to headline the Chicago Riot Fest on Saturday, September 17th. My theory, before I have you guys say anything, because I'm the anti-Morrissey guy here.
I don't know how you're anti-Morrissey.
He's an asshole, and I'm going to go eat a burger in spite of him after this.
He makes good music, though.
Fine. I can respect his music, but I can't listen to him after reading what he and hearing what he says. Anyway, I have a feeling, you know, everyone was so excited about the Misfits headlining, like the actual Misfits headlining this. He gets all pissed off that he's not the center of attention, and now he takes the attention away from the Misfits. I hate you, Morrissey. You guys.
I entirely agree with that.
Yes!
That is exactly what he did.
Yes!
I don't know if the time frames of these things line up, that that's actually the truth, but I don't care. That seems like entirely a Morrissey sort of thing, where he's like
no, I'm not.
He's like, if I'm going to play this show, I'm going to create the fucking controversy. I'm not letting anyone else create the controversy. And then he did.
None of this needed to happen at all. He could have just said, yeah, I'm playing Riot Fest. Great. Then they announced the Misfits, and then that's it.
Well, my theory is it's kind of some bad faith negotiation on Morrissey's part. Or Riot Fest didn't nail down all the things before announcing him. But I think Riot Fest probably has their stuff together, that they wouldn't make that kind of a blunder. What I think happened is that Morrissey had certain demands that hadn't been ironed out, but they had already agreed upon everything. But I don't know, maybe they couldn't serve food during his meat during his set, or maybe he didn't want meat backstage during his set. So he just said, "Fine, I won't do anything."
No, I mean,
Riot Smart played it wise. They didn't put out any messages or anything, and I think they were firmly aware that that's just Morrissey hard bargaining. So they said, "Okay, Morrissey, we'll give you what you want." And if Morrissey had agreed to play Riot Fest and then he pulled out, Riot Fest could probably sue him for quite a bit of money. So I think there was never really any jeopardy of Morrissey playing Riot Fest. I think he probably had some demands with regards to meat or something like that. I've said it before. Listen, Morrissey has beliefs, and people say, oh, Ian MacKay, he's so great. He'll never play bar. He only charges $5 or $10 for a show. He's got his beliefs, and he sticks to it. And he doesn't care what anyone else says. He sticks to his beliefs, and that's why Ian MacKay is great. Well, that's exactly what Morrissey does. Morrissey has beliefs about treatment of animals. Morrissey has belief about, you know, sweatshop apparel, and I respect that a great deal. So he has beliefs, and he will not bend for those beliefs. That's incredibly punk rock, if you ask me, he's a great artist.
I'm okay with having your beliefs. He wants to have his beliefs. That is perfectly fine. His problem, and this is the difference between him and Ian MacKay. Ian MacKay, you know, says, you know, I won't play bars, but he doesn't judge people if they start drinking.
I think he does. I think he does.
I really don't think so. I think if he chooses not to, but he's not going to try and stop anyone else. What Morrissey does is he comes in, and I'll use the example I've used before. He comes in to do an interview with Stephen Colbert when Colbert was still doing his show on Comedy Central. And he insists that all meat is removed from the Comedy Central building in New York, or wherever the studio is, or what it's called, and imposes his beliefs on everyone else. That's the problem.
To a degree, I respect that. I see your opinion too, but he's saying, listen, if you want me to be associated with your program, if you want me to bring value to your program, you should cater to my wishes. You know what I mean? I mean, look at it this way, Ricky. This might not be a great analogy, but maybe from Morrissey's perspective, it is. Let's say there's a bunch of Nazi skinheads down at Comedy Central, and they want Ricky Frankel to come. If you said, listen, I'm not going to come down to your show unless you get rid of all the Nazi skinheads, people would respect that. Now, from Morrissey's perspective, the treatment of animals is probably, I mean, he stated that it's on par with the death of humans. And so from his perspective, that's exactly what he's doing. So I respect it. Do I agree with his opinion? Not entirely, although I agree with some of his opinions. So I respect that he's saying, if you want me to bring value to your program or to your thing, then you have to meet certain demands I have so I don't violate my own beliefs.
Well, I also think Riot Fest was just asking for this to happen. when you invite Morrissey to play a festival, this is just what happens.
And honestly, it probably helped them sell a couple of tickets. I don't think they planned to do this, but honestly, I don't think the Riot Fest people were that upset. Like, they're like, this is par for the course for Morrissey.
No, actually,
we'll get it sorted out. You know,
I have a theory. I have a feeling. What happened was people wanted to see Morrissey. And when he said he's backing out, probably a lot of people said, you know what, maybe we're just not going to go because he's not going to be there. So then they probably stalled ticket sales for a little bit. I don't know.
I feel that if I had Morrissey play an event that I put on, I would make sure that he had like this like hermetically sealed shipping container into which he would enter when he arrived at the event. Like he'd go in the one end. And he would come out the other end to play his set. And then we go back into the shipping container. And within the shipping container, whatever would happen to meet Morrissey's moral barometer would all be perfect. And the rest of the fest would just be like raging around outside of him. But he'd be in the shipping container where like everything would be fucking on point. And that's how I would manage this if I was Riot Fest. That said, no one lets me run
anything.
Put
him somewhere else in his own bubble. Just do that. It's easier.
You can see out of a bubble. Right?
No, but I mean, look at it this way. I mean, not to drag this conversation out, but I mean, I'm extremely against sweatshops and that kind of a thing. And I would not be the same. But let's say we want you to come speak at our event. If I had the power within me, I would say, listen, I'll come speak at your event, but you cannot sell any sweatshop T-shirts while I'm there. I would do that, you know, because I don't want that blood on my hands. And I think Morrissey feels that way.
Now, granted, we don't know that Morrissey pulled out of this because of any weird moral objection. He may have just been being fucking temperamental.
Yeah, I still stick with my original theory, which is he wanted more attention than the Misfits got.
Possibly.
More than possibly.
Well, anyway, speaking of people not pulling out, Sticks and Stones are going to reunite. Little known fact about Punk News, Adam White is a big Sticks and Stones fan, and actually, he wrote a Sticks and Stones review a long time ago for Punk News, and I think he might have given a 10 out of 10 or 9 out of 10. He gave the Sticks and Stones compilation a very high score. Of course, as you might know, Sticks and Stones is the pre-World Inferno Friendship Society band, and they might even be pre-original Bouncing Souls, or they might be side-by-side with Bouncing Souls. They include Pete Ventantario, Ventantonio, who's also known as Jack Terrycloth. They include Johnny X and some other guys. They're doing a one-time full band gig this Friday for a cancer benefit for a young lady named Lavender Buttons. She's a semi-well-known or semi-known New York City jewelry maker. It's going to be their first full band show in about 10 years, and they only had about 3 or 4 shows 10 years ago before breaking up in like 94 or so. So this will be like their fifth or sixth show in the past 20 years. Adam White, what's your opinion on Sticks and Stones getting back together? Would you consider making the trip down to the Brooklyn to see them?
I mean, I'm going to say no to making the trip only because I can't manage to make the trip like 30 minutes from here to see a show. So I can't imagine that my record of failure would change for a really good band. But Sticks and Stones are amazing. Sticks and Stones, and I looked up that review right before this because I'm like, shit, who reviewed that compilation? Was it me? And I went and looked up and like, it was me. But yeah, I reviewed the Strife and Times back in 2003.
Woo, 13 years ago.
Yeah, that's pretty long ago. And I read it right now, and it's not super embarrassing, so that's nice. so like, you know, go teenage, not teenage, 2003, I was in college, whatever. Go college age Adam on this. You were kind of fat and had dumb hair, but hey, you reviewed this pretty good. Sticks and Stones, if you're not aware, are really super important. If you like the Bouncing Souls at all, the Bouncing Souls whole shtick feels like it's based off of the stuff that Sticks and Stones did back in the 90s. There was a time, and I say this in the review, and I think this statement stands. We name drop a lot of bands when talking about like the punk rock of the 2000s. Like we talk about the influence of Jawbreaker and the influence of like Lifetime and Kid Dynamite. And in my head, if you like stuff that came out of the East Coast, Sticks and Stones are right up there. Like that band was super influential. They, you know, I mean the Bouncing Souls connection is super obvious, but like, you know, and of course the World Inferno connection is super obvious, but like. Like they did so much stuff that resonated really heavily on East Coast punk rock. So they're a cool band. They probably remain a cool band because, you know, we like Jack Terrycloth these days. So,
Adam, do you like Sticks and Stones better than World Inferno?
No, I mean, like I
I feel that like Sticks and Stones is the band that I know more intimately than World Inferno.
Really?
Only,
yeah.
I mean, it's only because, I mean, really, it's probably only because at one point when I was in college, Chunksaw sent me this fucking compilation to review, and I really dug into it to review it. And I haven't like as diligently kept up on World Inferno since then. But there's something that really feels super familiar about the Sticks and Stones material, and we'll play a song from them in a minute. And I think that like that even if you're not familiar with this band, like this song should feel familiar because they're one of those bands that was just like influential enough that it worked that way. Like they don't have any of like the cabaret aspect that makes like World Inferno so like delightfully weird. So like there's like everything that played through of the influences on Sticks and Stones, like Husker Du and Replacements and The Clash and like 80s hardcore stuff. So like it should feel like super at home to anyone that was at all listening to punk rock over the past 10 years. So shit, I'm just going to play something. Here we go. We're going to play a song. You can definitely find it on the compilation, The Strife and Times that Chunksaw released. I have no idea if it's available anymore.
Yeah, but you can get on like Amazon for pretty cheap.
Yeah, but it was originally on their LP called Theme Song for Nothing, and this is the title track of that. So this is Sticks and Stones featuring the future Jack Terracloth, and the song is called Theme Song for Nothing.
Back, and that was Sticks and Stones doing Theme Song for Nothing. Well, listen, boys, we're already like, well, 46, 45 minutes in. We got a lot of stories to cover. You guys just want to keep rolling and see how far we get, and then maybe push the Rex till next week if we have to?
I can keep going as long as you guys want to.
Adam, what, you're the guy with the baby. Should we keep rolling, or what do you want to do?
They're sleeping. My drink is almost empty, but I will tolerate it for a little while.
Oh, let's keep rolling. Let's see what's happening. Listen, we got another polarizing story here. And I don't exactly – well, I got an opinion on – well, actually, I don't really have an opinion on this. I don't know exactly what to make of this one. A lot of the Punk News listeners probably know Candy Hearts. They're not a beloved Punk News band, but I think they're a band that a lot of Punk News readers enjoy. And they're a band that seems to hover around Punk News but isn't necessarily like maybe an embraced Punk News band. The front woman, Mario Loveland, she accused the tour manager, Zach Chad, of abusing her. on Warped Tour. Basically, there's a lot of accusations going back and forth. Loveland originally posted a thing saying that Chad threw a bag at her and it was emotionally abusive. Then Chad posted a denial saying he didn't do any of that, and the throwing of the bag was actually him handing a bag of money to her. And then Loveland responded that he was lying, but she wasn't necessarily specific about what he was lying about. So there's a lot going back and forth here, and people just said, well, they're both shitty people. I don't know if that's the right answer. Maybe it is, but maybe that's too easy of an answer, just so you don't have to, you know, be trouble your brain with it. Ricky, I don't know, man. Did you have an opinion on this story? Is there anything that we can dig out of this, or is this just a mess that none of us can do anything about?
So as much as I love speculating about Morrissey, this is one I definitely don't want to speculate about. You know, I mean,
let me pause you, Ricky. That's a good thing. Morrissey can take it. Like, if we take shots at Morrissey, it's not going to hurt him, but it's not quite as
like nice. This is just a messier situation.
Yeah.
So there's a lot
I'm
he
pro
said
Morrissey,
she...
by the way, people. I'm very pro Morrissey. Go ahead.
I picture Morrissey listening to this podcast, and then he like cries a silent tear because we don't believe
listen, Maz, I'm sticking up for you, Maz. I think you're a beautiful, interesting artist. You make complex, multifaceted work that is not easily digestible, and that's why people have trouble with your work. It's not I want to go out with you. It's not I hate you. It's a very complex, nuanced message. I back you, Morrissey. No matter what happens, I got your back. Well, not no matter what happens. Like you've done some pretty shitty things. But when most things happen, I will back you, Morrissey, on most things. A solid 80% of the things you do, I'll back you.
Don't look over here, Maz. Anyway, yeah, this is, you know, this is so wait, I'm trying to get this. They were in a relationship or were they married?
No, they were not married, and that was an issue a lot of people had, is she didn't, Mario Loveland didn't let people know that she was dating this is Zach Chad in her initial post, and then Zach Chad, but we were dating at the time. And I don't know if that's relevant or not to her initial message.
So here we see that we're not getting the full story from her, at least, and me, and probably even him. So, I mean, it's hard to make a call because both of them don't seem to be being forthright here about what happened. So, maybe, yeah, I don't want to speculate too much on this because it seems like they're both kind of being hysterical and just need to chill out and then wait and see how it plays out. I think it's a little early to call any shot.
Let's back off on the term hysterical because that's loaded, and let's just say they're both angry at each other on the internet.
Yeah, okay, fine. I'll take hysterical back.
Adam, wait, is this newsworthy? Yeah. Should we report on this kind of thing?
This is tough because we actually, yeah, like we talked about this behind the scenes when it came out, where it started to come out, because like this was the original stories on here ran on Alternative Press and Substream, and they kind of went back and forth from there, and it's difficult to take one of these stories and make it news if it's one of these, like, you know, single person goes onto a single news source and starts making accusations that you can't verify and you can't, you know, you can't do anything about. The bad way to do this, and I'm putting on my managing editor hat here, the bad way to do this is to go and to say and like report the accusation. This person says this, because what do you have to collaborate that except that they've gone and said it somewhere? You know, it's bad. Sorry. It's bad really to take it and to, I guess, to reiterate the point of the original accusation. The only way that we can do this is is look at the newsworthiness of it, of being, wow, all these people went into public and are having this public fight. And to report on it from the stance of being, these public figures are choosing to have a public fight about this. Here's the links to where all that's happening. And for us to go release that. Because otherwise, it gets really sticky with, like, how do you adequately report something like this? Because, you know, if we wanted an original source, I suppose we could have went to one of the two offended parties and asked for a statement. But as we were not one of the publications that was involved in the original accusations being published, that would feel a little bit weird, like we're all of a sudden jumping into it. And at the same point, like we're punk news. We don't have like people on staff to go chase
stories like that. Like, we're just like a volunteer thing. So I wouldn't expect anyone to go out and try to do that sort of thing. So, yeah, like, we're reporting this in that, like, hey, there's a big crazy public drama involving this or that artist that you know. Here it is. And that's the best that we can really do to put forward with it, given our resources. But it's weird because we definitely don't want to sound like we're minimizing one of the viewpoints, nor do we want to make it sound like we're taking an opinion on one of the viewpoints, especially because these were things that, you know, some other publication has decided that is worthy of them, you know, becoming the mouthpiece of. So
did we do a wimpy post? Because all we said, this person said that person, and that's all we're saying.
No, this is a cautious post because, I mean, the last thing...
That's what I'm saying, though. Isn't cautious and wimpy the same thing?
No, I think being careful and cautious is totally... Especially in this kind of a situation where right now it seems to be like a he said, she said kind of thing. You don't want to get in the middle of it. And if you misquote something, you just let people... Or if you maybe somehow come off as a slightly biased, the best way to do... I think letting people, like, just read it for themselves... And kind of coming to their own conclusion at this point was probably the best way to go. There's no real great way because this is a shitty situation.
I mean, I think about a lot of this in terms of like what Punk News's resources are, which is zero.
Yeah.
So yeah. We have no money. We have no, like, it's not like we have like we're not paying for like libel insurance or anything that like a real publication would pay for. So. It's one of those situations where, like, best we can do is point you to where all the shit's flying on this. But, yeah, you know, this is way different than posting, you know, tour dates or, you know, this guy's the new drummer of this band or any of that shit. Like, this really falls into the category of, you know, any one of the publications that's involved in, like, tossing allegations back and forth could be at least roped into a lawsuit. So, you know, we'll report that like that conversation is happening, but we're probably not going to interject ourselves into it because just like it's just totally not worth it for us.
Yeah.
I mean, the legality of being pulled into the lawsuit, and John, you could probably speak to this, is probably totally different than the fact that like being pulled in at all, whether it's justified or not, would be bad. Just as far as now we have to deal with this accusation.
You're saying if we got sued, it would be a pain in the ass? Yes.
Yeah.
It would be a pain. My official legal opinion is if we got sued, it would be a pain in the ass. Yes.
Absolutely would. And really, that's the weird thing is like it's been very seldom where Punk News has been threatened to be sued. But whenever that kind of thing has sort of happened, and it hasn't happened for many years, but when it has sort of happened, it's always been fucking super terrifying.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
So it's honestly, and like, and we've overreacted to it in the past. Like back in like the early days, like we got like basically what amounted to like a cease and desist from someone for something, and we panicked because like we didn't know like what do we do with this? Like, oh God, lawyers, right? Like we don't have any money. What are we gonna do? So, yeah.
Now we just get yelled at for posting actual dispersed news that certain outlets don't want dispersed, even though it's actual dispersed news that they paid to have dispersed.
Yes.
Or that they post it on public social media, but they didn't want other people to see their public social media.
I know. How could you report what was on our Instagram? That's what we get.
All right, shall we move on?
Yeah, I don't know. There's nothing much to say about this, but go follow the links on the story to read the stuff about it. We refuse to make any kind of particular call about it one way or the other.
Yeah.
Let's keep rolling. There are some videos that came out this week. We can talk about whichever of the ones you guys feel you want to talk.
I'll just do this one. So Alternative Press this week premiered Face to Face's new video for their song Double Crossed. The song is off their album Protection, which came out on Fat Records earlier this year. Quick side note: they ruled at Punk Rock Bowling. They played their, I think it was their self-titled for the 20th anniversary. I'm not too familiar with the band, but they are really good at Punk Rock Bowling. And so I watched this video, and I don't know if you guys did, but I had a bit of a problem with it. And I went on Twitter, and Fat Mike said basically the exact same thing that I said. So he said, "Who directed this?" Well, first of all, the video it focuses on a magician doing magic tricks while they're playing the song. And so this is what Fat Mike said on Twitter. He said, "Who directed this face-to-face video? You can't splice magician tricks. It runs the whole magic thing. It ruins the whole magic thing. I'm flummoxed." So, yeah, the video, you had him, like, starting, the magician starting a trick, then they cut to the band, and then you see him finishing the trick. And it just didn't make, it didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, there you have it. Ricky feels insane. That video
okay.
didn't make any sense.
Well, that died fast. Okay, we can move on.
Listen, Vitamin X have released an animated video for their song About the Crack off their 2012 album About the Crack. Listen, people, Vitamin X is cool. I'm not my favorite band, but they're cool. This video is so cool. Did you,
yes, it
Adam
is.
And Ricky, did you guys watch this video?
I did, and I love the fact that they had Lemmy swinging in the mosh pit.
Actually, there are dozens of cameos. I don't even know most of them, but like, what's cool is this whole video is only like a minute 24. There are cameos in this that you literally have to pause to see. Like, Lemmy's only in it for literally half a second. Scotty from Tank Crimes is in it. The guy from Mastodon is in it. The guy from Baroness is in it. Municipal Waste is in it. And there's probably a lot of other people that I didn't even miss. It's got a Simpsons homage. It's just a super fun, super clever video, and I loved it. And I think you should check it out. Adam, what you have? You check this out at all?
Yeah, I did. It is intense and crazy and amazing, and I've watched it once, and I feel that it goes so quickly and is so just like frenetic that I have to go through with the pause button to even start finding the references that are in it. So, you know, and it was, you know, it was way more fun than like, you know, band playing in a garage kind of videos, like that face-to-face one.
Yeah.
Face to face. I feel like I have such a weird relationship with that band. I do. What? I bear them no ill will. The fans that love them, I wish them the absolute best in the world. But I could not, despite having tried for 10 years, I cannot name you a face to face song. So I'm bad.
I'm kind of in the same boat, but like their performance though, over the weekend was quite good. It was
like, I would go see them. They're from the era of punk rock that I appreciate. And every time I listen to a face to face song, I'm like, yeah, this is cool. But like, here I am.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Talking about Vitamin X because I remember that video. So there, that's what I got. They should get more cartoons, is all I'm saying. So, yeah, I don't know. Here we go. Speaking of a bunch of cartoons, I don't know if that's true. According to Billboard magazine, there's a supergroup that is on the horizon here. It involves three of the four members of Rage Against the Machine. And whenever we say three of the four members of Rage Against the Machine, you know exactly which three of the four members you're going to talk about. So anyways, Tim Comerford, the bassist, Brad Wilk, the drummer, and Tom Morello, guitar player, are backing a new band. And this new band will be fronted by Mr. Chuck D of Public Enemy and Mr. B Real of Cypress Hill. This new group is to be titled Prophets of Rage, which is named after a Public Enemy song, of course. And if it's to be believed, they're debuting their shit on June 3rd, which should happen before anyone hears this podcast.
They actually played a show last night, believe it or not.
Yeah, they played at the Whiskey A Go-Go in Hollywood.
It's June 1st! Damn it, article that we wrote several
days ago. Our article was right, but they moved it ahead. They moved it up.
Because of our article.
Because of our article.
Yes, okay. Anyway, so the band played, I guess. So there you go. So clearly my information is behind what's actually happened in reality. So this band has played. What's going on?
This is cool, man. I'm a huge Public Enemy fan. Not a huge Rage guy. I'm not anti-Rage. Last night they played a gig. They did about one-third Rage songs, one-third Public Enemy songs. Well, and not quite one-third Cypress Hill songs. They did two new songs, too. The problem that Rage, the three other Rage guys, has always been is replacing Zach De La Roca. And Zach De La Roca, he's an extremely unique singer. And also, very few people can rap in front of rock music and make it sound convincing. It usually sounds cheesy. For whatever reason, Zach De La Roca is one of the few guys that can. They tried with Audioslave. Audioslave was terrible. Street Sweeper Social Club was cool, but Boots Riley is a phenomenal MC, but he's much more of a Bay Area MC. He's smooth.
Also, that was just Tom Morello. The other guys were not in Street Sweeper.
And, so Bruce Riley is a smooth, more gentle rapper, so he doesn't quite have the explosive power that you kind of need to be in front of guys like Tom Morello. So one of the few people that I think has the raw power is Chuck D of Public Enemy. I've seen Public Enemy 3 times. They're amazing live. They're one of the loudest groups I've ever seen live, one of the most energetic groups I've ever seen live. And I think it's cool how they kind of just did all 3 band songs and a couple of new tunes. People were kind of complaining that they only did old songs. I think that's interesting. I think it's interesting to have Public Enemy with Chuck D do Public Enemy songs and Chuck D do Rage songs. I don't know if Be Real is really necessary. I mean, Cypress Hill is kind of cool. But here is something you can't understand, how I could just kill a man. Like, I don't think you need – I don't know why – I mean, I'm not trying to be – I don't know why they invited him. They don't need him, you know.
Well, actually, they Rage Against the Machine, right before they broke up, they did a covers album. That was one of them.
I know, but I mean, like, Public Enemy is a hallowed group that really doesn't have that many bad marks to their name. Like, all their stuff is pretty respectable. Cypress Hill is a much more iffy group, you know what I mean? They've got some pretty new metal kind of songs, and they don't quite have the legendary cultural impact of Public Enemy. So I don't know why they – and honestly, B-Real's cool, but he doesn't have the raw power of Chuck D. But, I mean, listen, I don't think he would detract from the group that much. So I think it's cool.
I'm like the opposite of you in this, John. I'm like a huge Rage fan, but the other, I was never really into like the early hip hop stuff.
I don't know how you don't like Public Enemy, dude. Public Enemy. Maybe you haven't heard Public Enemy.
Not a lot.
You should listen to Millions, Fear of a Black Planet. Adam, what, you like Public Enemy?
I like Public Enemy way more than like I don't feel like I've listened to a lot of Cypress Hill. Like, I feel that like my main Cypress Hill reference is that episode of The Simpsons where the man wanted to blow up the loose. So. That's right. Ricky, you were making a point. I don't want to cut you off, but like, I'm like Ricky in this. Is like, back in the day, I was a huge Rage fan. Like, I remember, like, I saw like Rage at like 1999 at Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto when they were supporting the Battle for Los Angeles. They played a show with. Oh yeah, okay. This was super weird. This has a punk rock connection. They played a show. I forget who was supposed to open for them, but the opener was stopped from being able to come over and open. And it was a big name opener. I can't remember who it was, but the ones that ended up opening for them was Gangstar.
And, oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool.
And so Gangstar was cool. And then some band that I had never heard of before that I thought was totally terrible. And it was At the Drive-In. And I'm like, this Afro band sucks. But yeah, and I had tickets to the fucking Rhyme and Reason tour, was the tour that Rage was supposed to do after Renegades came out with the Beastie Boys, and it was canceled.
Oh!
It was canceled when Mike got in like his bicycle accident.
Brutal. Dude, yeah. Beastie Boys, I saw Beastie Boys twice, Adam White. Beastie Boys were amazing live. Amazing.
I know. Anyway, so Ricky, you were going on a thing.
So, I've seen Rage once. I saw them at their very last show in 2011. It's still the best show I've ever been to, hands down. It was absolute insanity. I have a feeling that Zach's just and I'm not basing this on anything. I don't have anything to back this up, but I just have a feeling Zach's really hard to work with.
Yeah, yeah.
And Prophets of Rage, I don't know if you saw any of the pictures at the Whiskey A Go-Go show that happened yesterday. They had a banner that said hashtag make America rage again. Maybe this is the political group everyone's waiting for instead of having Rage Against the Machine come back. I don't know.
It's not. That's lame. That is the lamest political reference that anyone could make at this point. Like, everyone made the Make America Whatever Again joke 3 minutes after Trump made that initial comment.
It's
stopped being funny since then.
And here's the thing. Like, I Do I regret missing the show? I mean, not
like missing this Friday, Ricky.
God.
You should go, Friday? Man.
I don't know. I mean,
what do you got planned for Friday, Ricky? What are you doing on Friday? Let us know.
It's probably sold out already, isn't it?
No, it's not. Tickets go on sale Friday morning. You should go. What do you got to do, Ricky? I mean, honestly, like you got a hot date? Is that what it is? Because that's probably the only excuse. Take your hot date.
It's not rage. Because here's the thing. It's not Rage Against the Machine. And honestly,
Adam White, tell this 23-year-old boy. You and I both relish.
I am 24.
20, Adam White, you and I both relish the time when we were 23 to 26. That's probably the best time of your life. Tell this young man to live it up.
I did so many responsible things when I was that age, and I really shouldn't have.
Where is it at? Where's the show
LA,
at?
Hey, Ricky. I mean, you have no excuse to not go, Ricky.
But here's the thing. This whole thing seems weird to me.
You don't think it's cool or interesting?
No. I mean, no. I don't.
Chuck D?
I don't. Even the name is I get that Prophets of Rage was a Public Enemy song, and that's fine. But they're using Prophets of Rage because it's the guys from Rage. And it just seems so.
Two on the nose.
It's so fucking on the nose. And to me, the other thing too is that even this Make America Rage Again thing, which I didn't even know about until 3 seconds ago and Ricky said it. And it's driving me crazy right now. Because the thing that I always kind of liked about Rage was that, you had overt pushback against the neoliberal Bush era stuff, especially on Battle of Los Angeles. Like that was coming through. But you had a ton of stuff that was worked into that was politics related to what was going on in Chiapas, Mexico and things like that. Like songs like People of the Sun and things. Just that really shone through what Zach De La Rocha's personal politics were and the things that he was concerned about. And it wasn't necessarily the most obvious mainstream political issue. So if they're going to come back and do this reunion because it's a nostalgia tour for these acts, cool, call it that. But to say, oh, we're going to make America Rage Again because this is about artists pushing back against Trump. Fuck you. That is the most obvious. That's saying I don't know. That's we're going to call the fire department because our house is on fire. Of course you are. It's so not I'm artistically
You guys are so jaded and you guys are angry at the world. Chuck D doing Public Enemy songs with the guys from Rage Against the Machine and DJ Lord and Be Real. This is cool. This is cool.
From
our perspective, this is cool.
No, here's the thing. I wouldn't mind going, but I am looking. Why are they doing this? They're just making this difficult on purpose. I'm looking at the how to get tickets and when to get them. You can't buy them online. You have to go to the venue. I am working. People work at 10 a.m. Okay, I can't just fucking go to over the hill in Hollywood to the Palladium box office and say and just wait in for line. I have nothing else to do.
That seems create artificial scarcity for the sake of press. Well, also, look at all the people that are lined up to get the tickets to this.
I have shit I need to do. I would go, but if I could buy it online, I would happily let Live Nation rip me off the extra 30% just so I could go. But I can't just drive to 20 something miles to go and wait in line while I actually have shit to do and work. To live, listen, so Ricky. I can go see.
Listen. So here's where I'm going on this, John. On the one hand, I totally agree. I would go see this because I like a lot of these people. It would be really cool. On the other hand, artistically, it is of the same artistic merit of when the casino that's in town here has Dennis DeYoung of Styx. Come play Styx songs.
I disagree. This is of the same artistic merit as when they had Muddy Waters backed by for Electric Mud. Who was it? The Genesis guys or somebody? When they had contemporary artists backing a legendary artist reinterpreting his classic songs in a new format. That's what this is.
But this isn't just Enemy. If it was Rage Against, we've got Chuck D. Yeah.
It's Chuck D and Rage doing both of their tunes. That's cool.
If it was actually Rage, believe me, I would
I can't believe you're just counting entirely because it's not Rage. It's Chuck D and Rage, or Chuck D and Rage.
I never have done hip hop. I've said that on
this. Well, then go get an education, Ricky. You'll have a great time.
So honestly, John, I'm coming at this on the other angle. I feel that Rage cheapens this.
That's actually an interesting. I get that.
I was a huge Rage fan, but like, I am totally willing to admit that, like, to me, like Rage was the artistic mind of Zach. To me, like,
I disagree with, because, like, you know what, I disagree with that, because if you listen to, and I'll even say, and I'll even go as far as what's it called, as Audioslave. Granted, Audioslave was garbage, but Tom Morello, his guitar work was
revolutionary. Tom Morello is a singular talent in and of himself, and he was a huge part of Rage's sound. I'm just saying that, like, from like a political and lyrical perspective, to me, like, Rage and Zach are the same thing. I would be way more respectful of this if, let's say, it was still the Rage guys, but was phrased as being like, we're going to bring Chuck D out here to do stuff, and we're going to back Chuck D, but it's the Chuck D show, and we're celebrating Public Enemy. Mm-hmm. I'd be way more accepting of this, but because it's like, it's that, but it's also a Rage thing. There's something about, like, I feel like the Rage guys have burned a lot of the goodwill that I would have once had for them.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, the fact that they can't get their shit together and be Rage is just something
I think that's even ridiculous. One guy can't get his shit together.
They have, well, regardless, they have wasted like a solid, what, like 15 years of not doing jack shit during a time where you know, politically, the music scene could have used them. Also, here's one of the main things that made me happy about seeing this come together. First of all, I love seeing Brad, Tim, and Tom get together and do stuff. I am just so thankful that this means hopefully Tom will stop doing his Woody Guthrie impression of the Night Watchman thing, which is just so ridiculously conceited. Like, dude, you were in Rage, you know, kind of like that was your place. And I don't know, I can't listen to the Night Watchman, but I don't know. I'm done.
Is this the worst conversation you've ever heard on this show? Write in at podcast.
This is a good conversation. I
have such a love-hate thing for this. I would have, if I could have made it to the Whiskey A Go-Go show yesterday, I would have tried to, but I was in Vegas seeing Dillinger 4, Flag, and all the bands I actually give a shit about. So,
well, Flag over this is the right choice, but you can go on Friday, Ricky. You're a young man, Ricky.
I am working.
The words of Freddie Mercury.
10 a.m. on Thursday. People are working. I can't just. I can't figure out a way to get in.
Scam your way in. Figure it out, Ricky. You can do it. We believe
in you. Here's what you do. You need to get some paper mache and some pulleys, and you set up a mock Ricky. That all right, I think we should move the next story to next week's show, because this one has been super long and it's just spiraling into ridiculousness. So there we go, 300 episodes and here we are. We don't even know what the fuck is going on,
arguing about a band that technically isn't the most punk rock band ever.
Public Enemy's pretty punk rock, man.
Public Enemy, but Prophets of Rage, we don't know yet.
Listen, Ricky, here is something that you can't understand.
This is like Public Enemy with Rome.
Yes, that is perfect. It's also Rage Against the Machine with Rome.
That's offensive.
That is offensive.
Is it?
Yeah, Chuck D is Rome. Chuck D is maybe the most dangerous MC there is. Him, KRS, Ice Cube, three most dangerous MCs.
Because I'm coming at it from a Rage Against the Machine fan perspective.
See, that's your thing. Is you're discounting Chuck D. Chuck D is a huge influence on Rage Against the Machine. They even recorded a song with Chuck D before.
I know that.
So I know, but so it'd be like if the Rolling Stones came up, they're like, we're bringing up Muddy Waters to play with us, and you're like, Muddy Waters might as well be the Rolling Stones with Rome. You have to recognize the importance of Chuck D.
I can end this right now. They should not.